According to my calculations, we have a quorum. And, Gary, we're missing a bunch of people, so you in your alternate role can vote and make motions and stuff.
Well, actually, Carl would be... He's not here. Okay,
nope.
So I bump up to
fully
functional member.
You do?
Well,
yes.
Hello.
You do. Okay, thanks, everybody. So call to order, roll call. We're good there?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how this may not be as necessary because we don't have any of our new members with us this evening. But I just wanted to, Bridget, introduce yourself last time. Pat Butler hasn't been able to join us yet. I just wanted to go over some procedures. I'm on item B on the agenda. Our meetings have been running longer than anticipated, and I am trying my best to figure out how long items are going to take on the agenda, and I've been brainstorming ideas with people about how to do that. And what I wanted to talk about tonight is that I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. Definitely in favor of active participation. We need to make sure everybody has a fair turn to speak. Everybody who's a presenter is going to assume everybody's read what was distributed to them, so they won't have to go over anything other than the high points of what is being presented or what decision is being asked of us. So what I would ask of everybody is that we allow each of the presenters a few minutes to summarize their talking points before we ask questions. And I think what I'll probably do is send this out to the new members and say this is, you know, or give it to Patrick and ask him to distribute it to those who were here, just so we're all on the same page. And also ask everybody to catch my eye, raise your hand, let me know if you want to talk, and I'll do my best to get everybody in the order requested. If we're in council chamber, push the button. I just think it's important for everybody to make sure we're on the same page and that we keep the meetings as efficient and effective as they can be. And Patrick, you know, we have microphones for a reason because this is being recorded and televised, so we need to make sure that everybody is aware of how the microphones work in this room. This is only our second time in this room, so Patrick, do you want to maybe cover that?
As long as the green light is on, it means it's being recorded. But if I understand correctly, City Channel can mute except when necessary. But otherwise, if you push it off, that's fine. But if you want to speak, you need to get her attention. And then if you're allowed, then you can turn the button back on.
And I just played with it, and it turns red when somebody turns the button off. So if they mute you, you'll show up as red on your microphone. So any other thoughts or comments about the process? I'm trying to give everybody an opportunity to participate. I love how interested everybody is in participating. But, you know, we want it to be effective, but we also want it to be efficient. So any other ideas from the group? Okay. All right. So this is how we're going to move forward, and I'll ask Patrick to maybe distribute to the people who were not either put it in legislature or something, so that everybody can be on the same page. So, hi. How are you doing? Good. I am gonna go back a little bit, and for your benefit. I'm asking everybody to hold their questions when people summarize a presentation. And because we want everybody to have a fair opportunity to speak, I need people to raise their hand or catch their eye, and then I will call on people so that we can have a fair opportunity for everybody to speak. Okay, did everybody have an opportunity to review the minutes?
Move approval. I'll second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Is there anybody here for public comment? And this would be on something that is not on the agenda for this evening. We have had this in the past, so just checking. Is there anybody here? You don't have anybody to speak for that, Patrick? Nope. Okay. Any disclosures or recusals? Okay. Now we move into the quarterly reports. Item F1, the Madison Police Department can't be here tonight, and actually we don't even have the report in front of us. So I would entertain a motion to refer this to our next meeting.
So moved.
Second.
A motion and a second and a third, I think, or a tie for a second. I think Rebecca got it. And any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Sabrina, parking report.
All right. So before I kind of get started through this, I want to highlight when you're looking through the report, I know it's about 20 pages, and you'll notice there's sort of two different reports and even numbers if you're comparing revenues and expenses. The standard report here that you're used to seeing that has the comparison, it's about six or so Excel spreadsheets and then some summary data from those spreadsheets on the first couple of pages. That's a process that's pulling data from a number of different sources to be able to break it down in the way that we want to and to get that detail. So because those are sort of snapshots of pieces of information that are compiled while these reports are being put together, it may not always reflect the financial data. So if there are adjustments and other things or journal entries made, they're not always kind of as current as the actual financial system. So I've included also just some summary data on the revenues and then expenses for it looks at 2015 through 2018, and that's a direct export from our Munis accounting system. So when you're looking at what are sort of the most accurate numbers, those numbers are going to be the ones that you're looking at. So just wanted to highlight that there are some timing and then differences in data sources where that's coming from for that one report. So with that, as many of you are aware, revenues in 2018 compared to 2017 were down significantly in the first half of the year. So taking a look here at this chart, we're looking at in March and May, year over year, we're at a 10% decrease. In June, we had a rate change that was a component of helping to level those out. But also there were just May seemed to be an unusual month in 2017 in terms of just higher than typical occupancies. You'll see that as I highlight a number of things. So it's not entirely the rate change. That's just probably a small component of that. Other factors in 2017 in terms of special events, weather, there's a number of factors that can contribute to that. So in May, we were at 10%. Year-end, we're at about 3% lower than 2017. This is just a breakdown and comparison by category. So taking a snapshot here of where we're at in June in terms of the difference by category, you can see attended facilities in June was down about 9% over the previous year. And I don't know if you can see the cursor here to probably not. But it's that top section there that we're looking at that's June. And then if you go to the bottom, attended facilities through the end of the year, again, that's leveled off at just a 6% difference. So we've seen that smooth out a little bit on street meters. However, we saw that increase in terms of losses year over year from negative 3% to a decrease in 5%. So now this is just taking a look at hourly transient revenue by facility and comparing 2017 and 2018. It also looks at occupancies as an average of those time frames. It's also important to note when we're talking the peak occupancies, we're just looking at the time frame from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. So if you're looking, for instance, at State Street Capital, we see some rather large decreases in overall usage. compared to 2017, and a corresponding decrease in revenue, which seems logical based on this data. However, if you're looking at Government East, we're seeing a 2% weekday increase in average occupancy, but we're seeing a decrease year over year of 10%. So going a little bit more into those numbers with Government East and why we see sort of the occupancy looking relatively stable with decreases in revenue year over year. One, if you're looking here, the blue is the monthly revenue, and this is just the cashier. It does not take into account permit revenue. For 2018, the gray is 2017. So you'll see in May that there's quite an outlier and a spike in revenues there. In terms of that difference between year over year, May alone accounted for $53,000 of the difference in revenues when we're looking at 2018 and 2017. And going back to looking at why our occupancies or weekday occupancies appear relatively stable, but we've got lower revenues, just taking a look at May, Saturdays in 2017 and Sundays had significantly higher occupancy, just averaging by half hour for that day, and that takes a look at the entire day for those periods. It was 21% higher on Saturdays in 2017 and Sundays 26% higher. Weekday just for May was about 5% higher in 2017, but again, relatively stable with just some outlier months that we're seeing here in 2017. So this is just a breakdown of where the revenues are coming from, and this correlates to the report in terms of how they're categorized. So looking at garages, they make up our largest revenue source with 61% meters on street, the second at 17%. And then that monthly long-term lease does account for both garages and lots at 13%. So this is the chart that I wanted to highlight here. This is the export that shows actual current year-to-date. And at the bottom, if you're looking just at operating revenue, so this is excluding, you'll see that capital contributions. That's essentially money transferred in from projects that were budgeted in capital that were eventually moved to operating expenditures. So those aren't truly revenues. Those are just sort of changes in budget sources. So if we remove some of those, exclude for interest income, we're looking at $15.5 million in 2018, and at the bottom here, $16 million in 2017 and $14.9 in 2016. So those are give you the year-end final numbers here for 2015 through 17, and those are just year-to-date. We've not closed out 2018 yet. Just taking a look at the expense by category, salaries and benefits make up the largest percentage of expenses, salaries at 48%, benefits at 18.6%, and then pilot and meter fee, $1.2 million, which is about 12.7%. And again, this is just reflective of year-to-date. Taking a look year-over-year, not too much of a change overall, 2%. You'll see the interagency and then the pilot and meter fee of a 12% decrease. I believe that, again, these numbers in 2018 don't reflect all of the adjustments yet, so that will probably be closer to a 0%, maybe a small decrease. And again, this is just the Munis export. Those are pages 4 through 9 on your report. If you'd like a very detailed explanation of all of our expenses from 2015 through 2018, those are all listed on those pages, so you can see a comparison of those. Overall, it's showing that our total expenses in 2018 are lower than 2017. But again, we'll have to wait for those final numbers. And just wanted, this was a slide I had presented a few months ago when we just did a budget overview and talking about the Judge Doyle project. So I just wanted to bring this for folks who might not be familiar sort of with where we're at overall in our budget. The year-end balance for 2017 and beginning balance for 2018 was $33.5 million. This is a chart taking a look at our capital projects that are budgeted in our SIP to date. You'll see the 2018 number. If we assume that all of the projects that are budgeted were to be paid in full by the end of 2018, so Judge Doyle, South Livingston, meter replacement and some others, that's where we would expect our reserves to land. Obviously, some of those are going to continue into 2019 and possibly 2020. So this isn't an exact projection of where we expect to end, but just to sort of highlight what we're looking at, if we can kind of put some finite places in terms of where those expenses will hit based on what's budgeted. That red line there is the $11 million mark. So that represents right now our approximate annual operating budget. So that's sort of the base level that we'd always like to remain at for the start of any given year. And you'll also see 2023 is showing the lake. That's actually designed in 2023 with construction starting in 2024. So again, we would expect that $22 million to be spread out actually over a couple of years. And any questions?
Any questions or discussion? Bridget?
So the way we look at occupancy is, so it's number of available parking spaces actual people parked there. So we take a look at occupancy of permit parkers and the hourly parkers. So those are combined, and it's actually taking, it's a report that pulls in half-hour increments for every day all of the basically car counts at any given time, and it's averaging those, adding them up over the total available spaces. Right,
okay.
Yep. And so that number can change. So, you know, if we close our roof, for instance, as we've had to do these last few days due to snow and ice, that, you know, can take out over 100 spaces out of available. So.
Not the whole day, right? It's just the daytime hour or limited.
Yes.
Hours, right?
When we talk about our peak occupancy, we're talking just that 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. But we do collect occupancy data for every hour of the day and compile it to get averages.
So if it says 75% up there, mm-hmm. is that 75% measured during those 4 hours as opposed to 25?
Right,
yeah,
that's
okay.
Correct.
On the Judge Doyle Government East reduction in revenue, is that related in any way to the opening of new private parking structures, the one at Anchor Bank in particular? Have you looked at that?
That's a good question. It's, you know, there's a lot of factors. It's hard to necessarily correlate specifically with that. You know, one of the issues was city offices relocating, and we saw some significant decreases then in revenue kind of immediately from that change. I think we saw about a 12% decrease. And so we just moved back, you know, we've been there a couple months now, so I think the move back will help us get a better sense of that. The closure of Pinckney Street, I think, has also had an impact. It's not as easy to get there, especially if you're coming in and heading eastbound where you've got to go around the block to get there. So I think kind of a combination of those things, but it's certainly possible that there has been an impact. Due to availability of other, but I couldn't tell you what that might be specifically.
Ken?
As I when I looked up there at some of the data, as I recall, when we were doing rates a couple of years ago, I think we increased the rate at State Street Capital.
Mm-hmm. Can you put that back up,
in order to try to shift, because we were getting higher occupancy, and we didn't increase the rate at Overture, and it looked like we might have overdone it.
So the 2016, we decreased the rate at State Street Capital from $1 an hour to 90 cents an hour, and then we had increased Overture from 75 cents to $1. And then in this past rate change, that was sort of just a targeted rate change, we then increased the State Street Capital from $1 to $1.20 per hour. And we have seen, at least in the last couple months, seen some greater occupancy, and certainly you can see daytime occupancy at Overture Center has increased. Although that rate change went into effect June 1st. So, I think there's maybe a small, a component of that impacted by the rate change, but we were seeing lower occupancies overall prior to that being increased there.
Steve.
Just anecdotally from people I know. So let's just make an assumption that people on the weekdays are savvier in terms of where to park and how to get in and out of ramps than weekend people, like tourists. Mm-hmm. And so the closure of that entrance and not knowing exactly how to egress and get in and out of it, I think did make a difference. And you saw the numbers on the weekend were drastically lower.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll level out in the future. But I think that's part of it, because once you realize you can't turn to get in there and you don't know what to do, you just keep going around this and then you end up somewhere else.
Right. And then you end up at our Capitol Square North.
Right. And hopefully the weather was nice and you just walk.
But you keep a close eye on these in terms of whether we need to make changes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Other comments? Okay, we need a motion to accept the report. I don't. Carl's here. Can you?
You don't have all your members here, so I think.
I think you should be at. Well, we're two. We just
you're missing
we're
three
missing
members,
three, so you should both be able to
make
motions.
Yeah.
That would be my. Anybody in a disagreement with that? Okay, then that's how we'll operate. All right. So we have a motion.
We do.
In a second. All right. Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Chuck?
Oh, you're welcome.
Chuck's behind you there.
Don't worry. Patrick's watching.
Good evening. In case there's any of the new folks at the committee that haven't met our staff, Sabrina's able to handle this by herself. I usually need help. So Drew Beck from our planning staff, if you ever have anything related to planning and scheduling, is with me tonight. And Wayne Block, our finance manager, is sitting next to him on the finance side. So as Ann said, we're going to give kind of the highlights. So the packet that you have, I've tried to pull out the highlights that I would like to focus on. This first one is a tribute to Alder Aarons. I'd always like to see things from the last 10 years. And so this is for the last 40 years, just to show that we are enthusiastically embracing. So this is the last 40 years, and what I want to highlight here is this is our first ridership blip up in several years, so that's very encouraging. But I want to urge caution. I don't know if that's the start of a trend. We did have a data problem with our fare box in the latter part of 2017 and lost some ridership data. We didn't lose any cash. I want to be clear on that. We were always depositing more cash and keeping our finance department aware of that problem. We have worked through most of it. We're still working with our farebox company. But also, this corresponds to a number of years where we have not been able to add peak hour service. So I'm just going to say that again. We have a demand for more service from Epic and from other places where we are not able to meet that demand. So I like to say, how can you grow if you can't grow? So I'm encouraged that we're looking at service to Sun Prairie and we're looking at our satellite garage. I think that's going to help us. But I wanted to highlight that as our ridership and how it compares to the last 4 years. Next chart here, I want to focus specifically on just 2017 and 2018 for our paratransit ridership. Why? Because the family care data changed everything. It was our largest change since the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act in the 1990s. So I want to focus on how in the beginning of the year before family care, our ridership was actually going up. Then in the spring, family care is implemented. We worked through it. Nancy Sen really did a fantastic job. She's our paratransit manager in effectively managing that transition. There were very significant challenges for our customers. We know that. But we had to make those changes. We were losing $4 million in revenues. And ridership by the end of the year was down by almost 60% for the whole year. It was about a 48% drop in ridership. So I just want to highlight that month by month to remind you that was a big change we went through, and with your help, we got through that. Next chart, since you've been seeing accident numbers up a little bit from the year before, I wanted to put that in perspective. Our preventable and chargeable accidents were up a little bit, but compared to the last 10 years or so, still in a really good spot. Chargeable accidents are where our drivers are completely responsible for an accident. We charge them with the responsibility for that accident. Preventable is just a slight difference where we say, well, maybe the other person got a ticket, but there may have been some things you could have done. So occasionally we reserve that preventable ranking for that kind of nuanced accident. We also not only look at how we rate them, but how does our insurance company rate them. So this is, we just got this report, and it is through the second half of the year compared to the prior second half of 2017. You will see that we had fewer occurrences of payout claims, that is, our insurance companies paying out for accidents that we got involved in, and you will see that the dollar amount paid out was less. So it shows that even though our accidents were up a little on preventable and chargeable, our insurance numbers were down, and the trend overall continues to be pretty positive. So kudos to our safety staff, our training staff that really are staying on top of this. I'm going to bring back this chart because we found an error on it in the 11th hour. So our actual Metro expense per revenue hour is higher than that. So I will send that updated chart in your next packet. And I'll focus on the next chart, which is our how we ended the budget, which I'm really pleased with because it was, again, not just because of paratransit, but for other reasons, one of the most volatile budget years we've ever had. And we ended up, if you go right to the bottom, adding about $500,000 to our reserves. And very happy that that was the case. If you look across at revenues, our revenues were up. That was driven by the fact that we had more family care agency tickets bought than we thought we were going to. I'm very pleased to get Nancy Sen, worked with the family care agencies, established trust with those agencies, encouraged them to use that and not try to work around it, but to, you know, play straight with us, and for the most part, we think they did. So our cash ticket passes were up, mainly because of that paratransit revenue increase. We controlled our expenses. We did delay the phase-out of directly operated paratransit, so our driver wages were up, but our payout to contractors and other savings and line items showed a net drop in operating expenses. So overall, a good year on the finance side. There is a very detailed chart. Wayne calls it my favorite. And that is, we show you at the end of every year all of our ridership by route. For those of you that really get into data, you can look at that at another time. But what I do with that chart when you look at it is I like to pull out data and meaningful information. So I'm going to give you two tidbits from that. UW ridership continues to be around 50% of our total ridership. Was actually 52%. So in that chart, with all the lines and all the routes and all the revenues, that's where you can get that kind of information. MMSD was also 14% of our ridership. Both of these were up a little bit. They were a factor in our ridership increase last year, so I wanted to highlight that. I want to just touch on a couple projects, not all of them, but I can certainly answer questions afterwards. But on the VW settlement, speaking candidly, which I hope you find I always do, we got a lot of criticism that we're not getting electric buses on the VW settlement. And I want to explain very plainly why that is, because we're not ready to specify a contract. When we put out a bid for buses, it's 150 pages with information on the propulsion system, the seats, and everything else. And so the feds gave us the ability to get three new buses, which we're getting, three all-electric buses, where we didn't have to specify them. And the company is Proterra. We met with them today. I'm really glad that we're working through this carefully, very cautiously, but we want to do that procurement the right way when we're ready to buy electric buses. They're more expensive, and there are some issues across the country, especially in northern climates, where electric buses are having problems. In Duluth, most of December and January, Proterra buses, the ones we're getting, have been out of service. So we met our service commitment over the polar vortex. I'm very proud of that, and our staff. But we can't sacrifice any buses during a time like that. They all have to be working. We're going to learn about our electric buses. I feel like we have good reasons for doing it. I want you to know I think we're trying to represent you and the community well and using taxpayer dollars carefully. So we're getting diesel buses with our VW settlement, and that's a little background on why. You're going to hear a lot more in the coming months on these next three things. I just want to highlight now that we have been involved with a special committee looking at special events and how they impact our service. We did a survey. Over 50% of our riders are saying they avoid using Metro Transit during special events. I have been embarrassed waiting at a shelter at the beginning of a special event, and someone comes out and says, "Why are you at that shelter, Chuck? There's a special event that just started 5 minutes ago." And I go, "Geez, I work at Metro, and I didn't know that." We have hundreds of events, and many of them impact service on the square. You're going to hear more about that, particularly if we're beginning to look at bus rapid transit alignment. We want that to be a fairly fixed alignment, not move it 50 times a year. That's not how rail systems work, and that's not how bus rapid transit systems should work. They should be fairly fixed. So you'll hear more about that in the coming months. We're beginning to work with the MMSD middle school. Some of the newer members may not recall that. We tried to accommodate their new starting times for middle schoolers, where studies have shown middle school students do better if they have a later starting time. That conflicts with our peak hour. We cannot accommodate that change. They're going to go out to Yelp bus service. So we're going to begin a three-year phase-out starting this fall. You'll hear more about that. It's going well in our relationship with the school district. And finally, we plan to start new service in Sun Prairie in August of 2019. Those details are proceeding, and when we come back to you with a public hearing announcement, you will see the details of those changes to go into effect this summer. That's an overview of what's going on at Metro. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Questions for Chuck? Comments? Is there a motion to receive the report?
I'll make that.
Bill? Second by Carl? Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the agenda is the execution of the lease with Madison Freewheel Bicycle Company. Is that Dave?
Wait, it's going to pop back up. Hold on.
Good evening.
Okay. Good evening.
So we're going to be executing the lease for the Madison Bicycle Resource Center. There's going to be 118 units of parking available there, and 118 lockers, three single occupancy showers and changing areas, and then bathrooms also available. Those are going to be available 24/7 to paying members. The cost on that is going to be $50 a month or $500 a year for access to that space. And then there's also going to be a full service retail space inside there with free classes to the general public. Free Will Community Bicycle Collective taught free classes to over 6,000 students in the last 15 years and gave away over 12,000 bikes in that time. And we will be keeping our Southside location, though the two locations financially will be managed separately. And that is opening at the JDS building, Block 88, the corner of Pinckney and Doty, looking at a fall opening for that, assuming that everything is on time. Just right over there, if I'm orienting myself in the building correctly. And then I can send out some more detailed information to the committee with great diagrams and 3D views of what the space is going to look like.
We got
you already have them all? Oh, wonderful. Okay, good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm glad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's also going to be a self-service bicycle station, an info stand, and we will also be using the space as an event space for cycling-related community events. And we're in the process of fundraising for the project. We're in the process of applying for about $100,000 of grants, and we just got a business line of credit from Summit Credit Union, which we're signing the paperwork on Friday for that. And we just got a matching grant from ASO. We're in the process of getting some other smaller grants from local organizations in addition to the larger ones. And then we have good prospects for funding either through traditional bank financing or through the Madison Cooperative Development Committee, MCDC. I think that's what that's called. Madison Cooperative Development Corporation.
Madison Development Corporation?
No, MCDC.
Cooperative Development Coalition.
Coalition, yes. Yes. So we've been working with them. Yeah. And then any questions?
So we're being asked to authorize the execution of the lease with Madison Freewheel Bicycle Company. This was distributed to everybody last time, but the council meeting was canceled, so it wasn't properly referred to us before this particular meeting.
What's the term of the lease?
3 years.
3 years?
Mm-hmm.
And is there an option to renew by either party? Or?
There is an option to renew. It would have to be authorized by both parties.
Other questions?
Move to approve.
The motion?
Second.
And a second? Discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next we have South Gammon Road Geometrics.
I'm Gretchen Aviles Pinedo with City Traffic Engineering. We were here a couple months ago, and we presented some alternatives and the preferred alternative for the Gammon Road project. Today, we are here for geometric approval for the first phase of that project. The agenda consists of the project location and limits, the purpose and need for the project, and the geometrics for the preferred alternative. In gray, let me turn on the laser. In gray, we have an existing path between Commerce and South High Point Road. And South High Point Road was reconstructed in 2017 with a protected pedestrian and bicycle path on the west side. In blue is the first phase, the one we're here for geometric approval. It has a construction date of 2020, so next year. And it includes the reconstruction of Gammon Road beginning just south of Mineral Point all the way to the westbound Beltline ramps. It also includes the Westtown path from Grand Canyon Drive to just west of Gemmon Road. And in red is the rest is a future phase construction to connect that Westtown path all the way to Junction Road. So the purpose and needs for the project are to improve roadway operational characteristics, improve pedestrian and bicycle facilities on Gemmon Road, provide a low-stress pedestrian and bicycle connection from Grand Canyon Drive to County Highway M, and to replace the pavement, which is in poor condition. The existing typical section for Gemmon Road consists of three southbound through lanes right here, two northbound through lanes, one bike bus right turn lane for northbound. It has 2.5 feet of curb and gutter on both sides of the median and 5-foot sidewalks on both sides of Gemmon Road. The preferred alternative maintains all the through lanes for both southbound and northbound. The bike bus right turn lane is now 12 feet wide. Curb and gutter on both sides of the median will now be 2 feet instead of the 2.5 on each side. The sidewalk on the east side of Gemmon Road will be maintained at 5 feet wide, while on the west side, it will be a 10-foot wide shared-use path. This preferred alternative provides a protected pedestrian and bicycle facility on a high-volume urban roadway and maintains the terrace width to accommodate the landscaping and street lighting while avoiding the need of right-of-way acquisition. The typical section for the westbound path, which was the dashed blue line from Grand Canyon Drive all the way to just west of Gemmon Road, will be a 10-foot wide path. We have signalized intersections at Gemmon Place, Odana Road, and the westbound Beltline ramps, at grade crossings at Gemmon Place and Odana Road, and we have a proposed underpass for the westbound path at Gemmon Road. The last meeting, more information on crashes, specifically crashes relating pedestrians and bicycles were requested. So we did a 5-year study, crash study, from 2013 to 2017. Overall, in general, there were no fatalities. At Gemmon Place, there were no crashes involving pedestrians or bicycles. At Odana Road, there were 4 crashes involving pedestrians and 1 crash involving a bike, resulting in 5 injuries. And at the westbound Beltline ramps, there were 2 crashes involving bikes that resulted in no injury. So this is how the project will look like once it's finished. The path will begin at Mineral Point Road. It won't be red, but it will be on the west side. The crossing will be green for high visibility. We currently have a channelized right turn lane over here, which we're going to square off, and the rest is going to stay pretty much how it is today. The path continues on the west side, same for the crossing. It'll also be green. The change here will be now we would have from the westbound movement will be 2 left turn lanes and then a shared through and right turn. The path continues. There's a bus pullout on the west side of Gemmon Road. Bicycles and pedestrians have the option of crossing at grade to continue south or north on Gemmon Road, or they can use the proposed pedestrian bicycle, the proposed underpass, to go west right now up to here, which where this phase stops, but eventually will continue all the way to Junction Road, or continue east over here along Grand Canyon Drive. There will be a connection for future sidewalks right here. The path continues east, reconfiguring the parking for the Radisson Hotel to be able to connect to the existing shared-use path, which continues further east, and to the connecting to the existing Strug Canyon underpass, which crosses the Beltway. Any questions? Gary.
The proposed 2020 construction area, I refresh my memory, was that impacted by flooding this summer to any extent?
Yeah, I think so.
So is the project taking that into account in some fashion?
We're redoing the storm sewer there, but I think Glenn will have more.
Well, is he coming up anyway?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm Glenn Yeager with City Engineering and project manager from the engineering side, and we will be doing a complete overhaul of the storm sewer system in Gammon. And you typically design the storm for a minimum of 10-year events, but in this case, we're doing the design is going to be for a 100-year event. The south side of Gammon, just south of the Beltline, is an enclosed depression, and that if that area by Siebold down there floods, it overtops the crest of the hill there on Gammon and flows down Gammon to the north. And so in enclosed depressions like that, our policy is designed for a 100-year event. So that's what we're going to do in this case to direct water up into the detention ponds closer to Mineral Point Road there.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Bridget.
I just have a question about the proposed underpass. So given the timing on this, those haven't been designed yet at all, or?
We're at 60% for all the plans.
You're at 60%? Is there any way, so I just have some concerns. Just I deal with bike pedestrian underpasses all over, and because of a lot of the events that have happened in the past few years, we've just had a lot of issues across the state with flooding, particularly of those kinds of facilities, and stormwater issues just being a lot more significant than we're used to. Can I take a look at the plans?
Yes. So we had some preliminary plans attached to the agenda. I don't know if those were handed out.
Okay.
It's item G2.
G2. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I didn't see the stormwater engineering in that, but
so
I'll take a look.
I can explain it to you, and also I can provide those for you. But so currently, the stormwater is split on Gammon Road. A portion of it comes down on the east side, and a portion of it comes on in the middle. So with the underpass, we're going to route the storm along the south side of it and under the ramp on the west side. So the drainage of the underpass itself, mm-hmm. it will be a straight grade at 25% to the west.
Okay.
So we won't have to collect water within the underpass.
So there won't be runoff from the Beltline being directed down?
In the ramp area.
Right.
Would go. So the route will be around the underpass and then down the west side of Gammon Road and then back into the middle of the median.
Okay, so essentially the only drainage that the underpass will have to handle is from its own impermeable surface?
Correct.
Essentially, okay.
So this area will be all ramp, and it will have to be able to handle that water that falls on that surface.
Okay.
Okay, other questions? Is there a motion to approve the geometry? Motion by C.
Second.
Second by Bill. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Okay, next. It's probably a rule about that, isn't it? Next, we have amending the official map of the City of Madison to remove map reservation on property on Rethke Avenue. We're here to discuss that.
Of the item. There is a proposed development project for 701, 703 Rethke Avenue. During the review process, we found that there is a reservation for public streets on this property. So that's to extending Burke Avenue, just one block, to Rethke. After working with the city staff and development team, we all agree that's a very old reservation from 1966, I believe, and the city never had a need to build that road over there. We believe a pedestrian bicycle path through there will be adequate for the connection, and also the neighbors have concerns that if we do connect it up, it actually creates some problems for residents living on the street. So that's this item is for. From a traffic engineering's perspective, we think the pipe bike accommodation would be a good enough accommodation. So we supporting we support remove this official map reservation for the on the property.
So the just to clarify, to make sure we're all on the same page, what we're being asked to do is contingent to a couple of items noted on page 3, very specifically with regard to what Yang just talked about. So as opposed to just asking us to approve the change, the change would only go into effect if they met those
correct
contingencies that Yang was talking about with regard to the bike path.
Right.
Ken.
And just to be clear, once this owner grants an easement, all future owners are obligated by the easement, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. That gets recorded.
Yes. Right.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca? So I requested this to come to the Transportation Commission. I had it referred here. It wasn't going to be. It was just going to Plan Commission, but I felt it was important for this commission to be in the loop when these kind of planning decisions and deals happen. So this is like the easy version of Jeffy Trail. It's almost, right? And we're going to get it done tonight, right? But basically, I mean, it's on that order of things, and I think this commission should be aware of, you know, those plans for the future for that ped bike purposes, and should these conditions occur and that get built, I think it would be nice to let us know, keep us in the loop.
Yeah, so maybe you could just let it keep us posted if that does happen in the future.
Sure, we'll do.
Okay, thanks. Ken, Gary?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, next, it's good for us to see things like that,
yeah.
So I appreciate you referring it to us. Welcome back. Thanks, Tom. It's Tom, right?
Yep.
Neighborhood Traffic Management Program List. And we had a great presentation by Tom last time giving us the background on the program. So, and we did hear from a number of members of the public, mostly in support, one person hoping for a different type of traffic calming, but hopefully everybody had an opportunity to see those emails.
So today we're going over each individual street that we have up for approval.
Those streets are in your packet. The one that's highlighted orange is, let's see. Well, I guess we can just go through each one. This is the overview map that shows where each one is in case you're not familiar. Browning Road is on the north side. It's next to, adjacent to Berkeley Park. We have three speed humps here. So for the speed humps, we like to try to keep about a 300-foot spacing, so just keep that in mind. Dolphin Drive is on the far southwest side, and that is also next to a park, Sandstones Park. There's a lot of driveways there, so it's kind of tough to fit them in, but four at this spacing do fit in. Yeah.
Okay. Can I just ask you, can you just give us the background of why some streets just, I mean, I can sort of get it for the ones on downtown area a little bit more that I'm familiar with. Why is this one prone to having speeding? You know, can you give us a context of why this street versus another? Is there something that feeds in?
Well, location of the park. There's a lot of activity in the park. And so this is just a long stretch. It's kind of wide open.
That's what I'm looking for. It's a cut through. Okay, yeah.
People avoiding Maple Grove and the Key.
People avoiding
everything.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I was looking for.
East Dayton Street and East Mifflin Street. So that orange highlighted one is the 1,000 block of East Mifflin Street, and that is just off the screen between Brearley and Ingersoll, and that's with the Lyric 2. We're holding off on that one, so that's why it's not included in the list. But this 800 block of East Dayton Street, that's next to the park, and that's kind of another situation where the street just opens up visually, so get a little more speed in there. And then we have one plan for the 700 block of East Mifflin Street. That's next to Reynolds Transfer. So we just put one in there east of their driveways so the trucks that load in and out can use Mifflin to Blount or Mifflin to Blair. Spade Street, this is the one that we received some emails about. There are existing speed humps west on Spade Street, west of this location. So the major complaint here was at around the intersection of Dickinson Street and the location next to Marquette Elementary and O'Keefe Middle School. So a lot of students, kids walking in the area.
Sure. Yeah. Gary?
Refresh my memory, Tom. Do we run a bus on Spade Street?
Yes.
And what did Metro respond to this report?
Metro can live with it. They're not thrilled with it, but
they're not happy with it.
I talked to Chuck, and he, because he had to leave, I asked him that question. He said that Metro works very closely with traffic engineering to make sure that the speed hump would work with the buses. Would that be right, Ian?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Good question, though, because that was brought up in one of the emails. Yeah. Questioning why it would be there on a Metro route.
Lake Point Drive, this is south kind of off of Broadway, and that parcel on the corner of Hoboken and Lake Point Drive, the 5340, is a neighborhood center, so that's what brought this one up. Even though it is close to a stop-controlled intersection, the location next to the neighborhood center is the reason for this one.
So, if you mind interrupting here, so to my understanding correctly, then that the idea is for westbound traffic to slow it down before it reaches the... Because this one struck me, and the one on Mifflin struck me as... having a one-off speed hump,
what the efficacy of a single speed hump on a stretch of road is. So in this case, is it just to slow down westbound traffic before the community center?
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
And then on Mifflin Street, I guess similar question. What I guess is the benefit of the single speed hump in that particular location?
So that's another one where the Livingston Street intersection, that's an all-way stop.
Tom kind of talked on it, but probably we should offer even more information. As we see, east of Burley, we're planning doing some speed humps over there as well. However, because the city just approved a development project on that block, so that's NERCA 2. So we want to see what's the impact on that before we do it. Also, if we do it this year, it might be damaged from all the construction activities. So that's going to be kind of deferred to next year. So with the speed humps in a couple blocks away, so you kind of have a continuation, although I think the ideal approach would be have multiple ones on the same block, but it's still going to help a lot to slow traffic. We also have more speed humps as we go further east on Mifflin Street.
Excuse me, just one second. Does that answer your question, Jessica?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess my question then would be, is there a benefit to doing that one now versus looking at, since there's some question about what the usage and the condition will be at the end of that project, is there a benefit to doing them kind of all at the same time on that street as opposed to doing a one-off?
That's a good question. So there's going to be some benefits because we already have additional speed humps further east. So we kind of extending that zone by doing this one speed hump. But I think you are right. When we do more two blocks away, benefits definitely will be more. But now even with one single one, we do think there's some benefit to it.
Okay.
That is going to go in on Mifflin Street, being right near the transfer company. If I remember correctly, they have a lot of 18-wheeler traffic going in there. So do you guys talk to them to confirm that won't be an impediment to their business?
Yeah, so we still have to do the approval process for the residents. We have not done that yet, so we wait until it's approved here, and then
go
to the residents. So. Okay. Right, none of these are a done deal that they're going to be constructed yet.
Okay. Yeah, but it's a good point. That's why we only do propose one speed humps instead of two.
Okay.
Specifically for that reason. So they can get out from our way and get in from our way.
Yeah.
But it's become an issue.
Like just thinking they'll have to turn in right there and the turning action of the tires on the speed hump, I would think, would potentially contribute to the deterioration?
Yeah. Also, the tires will be a little bit uneven.
Yep.
So that may be sometimes problematic.
Okay.
That's true.
And there's a path on Livingston, you said?
Yep. And, Reynolds has multiple driveways. So right west of where that speed hump is shown, there's a driveway there to their open parking lot, and then there's two more driveways closer to Blount Street. So that's why that location was chosen for that speed hump.
I can't recall if there's stop sign also on Blount in this one.
No. Okay. And the last one is North Star Drive. This is where it's really been built up in the past few years. A lot more residents out. This is in Grandview Commons. So there's a lot of activity at this park. And North Star now connects through. You can connect through from Cottage Grove Road up to Milwaukee Street. So there's a lot more traffic and high-speed traffic. So.
Okay, are there other questions for Tom? Go ahead.
Are there cases in the past 5 years, like Prairie and Cameron Drive on the southwest side, where traffic calming was put in that did not go through this process?
No, not that I know of.
So Prairie, near Heritage Congregational Church and Maple Grove, and then the one on Cameron Drive off of Raymond, both went through public traffic calming process?
Yep.
Okay. I don't know how it happened because I tried to get it on Prairie for years, and I was vetoed from other sources in the city, and then all of a sudden there were traffic humps.
So. Yeah, Prairie went in. That was probably close to 5 years ago.
Okay, thank you. Well, the reason why I'm asking is the Alder, so that was an area of my district that was transferred to Alder Farron redistricting after I was told not to even bring it forward, to be honest. Yeah. And then there was egg on the face to see them actually built, but Matt Fair didn't know anything about it as the Alder. So that's why I'm confused. I'm like, well, didn't the Alder have to know? Like, I mean, I at least knew what happened on Dolphin Drive, even though I didn't really support it. Yeah. But anyway, all right, thank you.
Well, Steve, that's a great question. I don't remember from the presentation last time. Is there something, the neighbors bring these forward and request from the city, but is there a notification process to the Alder that if it's not in there could be added so that the Alder's aware that the neighbors are asking for this? So that's what you're talking about, Steve. So that, you guys know what's being, guys be generic, know what's happening.
Yeah, we try to keep the Alders copied on all the emails, and then they also receive the letter that goes to the residents. So in case they missed out on it, getting to the point of approval, then they'll get the letter.
Okay. Bill and then Ken.
What Steve was being. These have all passed through city staff. In other words, fire.
Yes.
Has reviewed these and they can.
Metro.
Yep.
The first step in the process is we check sure it's okay with
internal.
Fire and Metro.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's typo. They changed their position. So because Metro was the veto power when I was first elected on Prairie.
Yeah. And I know Prairie. I think Prairie was right before I took over this process, and I know it was right on the line of being approved or not being approved based on it's a collector and higher speed and Metro. Yeah.
Ken?
What are we looking for here? A motion to approve?
Yes.
Before I move to approve, I'd like to separate the Spate Street portion of the whole list.
Okay. So Carl is suggesting that we separate Spate Street out from the other ones and deal with it separately?
Yes.
Motion to approve everything but Spate Street.
Okay. There's a motion to approve everything but Spate Street. And a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, so let's look discuss Spate Street then. Is there a motion to consider approval of Spate Street? Or did you want to talk about it first, Carl?
I suppose the proper protocol would be to
get the motion on the floor.
Not approve Spate Street. And then if there's a second, I can speak to it.
Okay, so Carl, you're making a motion to not approve
Spate
Street.
I'll second
that.
Discussion.
Okay, so there's a motion to not approve Spate Street and a second to that. So discussion about that.
I'm curious why.
Carl, go ahead.
I live in that neighborhood, and I've been getting mixed emails from residents, some opposed and some in support. And combined with the fact that Metro is not fully in support of it, but going along with it, primarily due to wear and tear on buses, on the humps, and it's a two-block section from Rogers up to Baldwin. I think that there are other traffic calming techniques and other stop sign, four-way stop signs. I'm just in general not having support of speed humps, and Metro is not crazy about this one. And our role as a commission is looking out for the best interest of Metro in general. I think we can take this one off the list for the benefit of Metro and just to eliminate what
do
it does to vehicles.
Not for this. Oh, not for this. Okay. I just wanted to double check to make sure we didn't have somebody here to talk about Space Street while we were in the process of talking about it. Okay, other discussion?
So I guess a follow-up question that I have is, how is the correspondence that's included in our packets determined? I know, like, in our packets, all the correspondence that we've received that we base our decision off of as commission members is in support. So
there was one that said he preferred, if I, correct me if I get this wrong, there was one who said that he preferred six in support of speed humps and one opposed in favor of stop signs, was how I read the feedback.
Sure. So, you know, I'm just curious with other people getting different feedback, how that filters into this group.
I don't know. The ones we got came directly from the residents. Were there other ones that you guys received or other feedback?
No. Those are the ones that we received so far. But I would say that as Tom mentioned, this is not a, you know, a guarantee that speed humps will be installed on these streets. So, so right now we're just looking, you know, to approve this you know, ranking this kind of list so we can work further on the process. So the next step actually would be, so let's say if this was not approved at this meeting, we're not going to work with neighborhood anymore, continuing in the process. But if it does get approved, we're going to work with neighborhood to make sure they vote for speed humps. They may, you know, they may request different measures. We can work with them on that.
I guess that's my question is, you know, then for other traffic calming measures like stop signs or a circle or something, what is their process? Do they begin the process again or?
No. So this is a recommendation from staff. We think, you know, for the problem that we have on this location, speed humps will be the way to reduce speed. We may propose other things like maybe islands or circles, but we will think it's not going to either solve the problem or create other issues like for metro operation, things like that. Also, you know, for stop signs, it does not have to be, you know, this process. This process is more, you know, typically stop signs are not a traffic calming measure. A lot of people think it would reduce speed on a street. Actually, the data shows it does not. People will stop at stop sign but speed up once they hit the stop sign.
But it makes them feel better.
That's correct. Right. So, yeah, my point is that this approval does not tell the staff to go ahead to put speed humps on the street yet. There's still going to be a process involving all the neighbors that to vote on it. So we still have a voice of opinions and to determine, you know, what's to be done on Space Street.
So, okay, go ahead, Ken.
I'm just saying, I think I would probably move or vote against this motion so that it could go to the next step and engineering can find out from residents and get more specific feedback. So it's not necessarily that I'd be voting for speed bumps. I'm voting for
more discussion
the
with the neighborhood.
To get the discussion.
Yeah. Let's clarify and make sure that I understand where we're at. So if we would not approve it, that means we would not endorse the city talking with the neighborhood further about traffic calming measures. Is that correct?
That's correct. At least for, you know, for this process, we'll stop working on it. But there is a possibility for the neighbors to start another petition process. We can add it back on.
Okay. So
it leaves the list if we don't approve it?
Correct.
Yeah. But that's basically the coming to us not to look into, you know, these options on this street.
Okay.
So we'll...
Steve?
Neighbors brought it here already.
They did.
So I feel like the neighbors have already more or less endorsed the idea of us moving forward with investigating it.
And it was a 50, it requires over 50% of the 60% from the petition process.
I mean, it came from the neighborhood to us, correct?
Yeah, right, correct. Right. That's the only way you can have it.
Yeah.
Right.
And if it is, for all of these that are approved, this is the final level of approval before, and so they'll continue...
From us.
So traffic engineering will continue investigation. If everything appears to still work out, then we wouldn't have another.
Correct. The final decision will be actually the neighbors.
Right.
So they can vote whether to move forward with the project or not.
Okay.
For the commission, we're looking for is a kind of a approval to for us to work on these few streets instead of working on all of them. Because we have limited resources, limited times.
So we're allocating resources.
Correct.
Basically.
Yeah, and also the general ranking of the list.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some situations that according to the ranking mechanism, a street may rank pretty low, but the commission may discover things actually want us to, for example, move one street off the priority and move another street off the priority because some issues that came up from the public process.
Question for you.
Yes.
So if this motion passes, then my intent was just to eliminate the prospect of speed humps on Spate. But if this motion passes, would that remove Spate Street from further consideration of other traffic calming techniques? That was not my intent.
Yeah, for this process and for this year's process.
Yeah.
But we can still work with the neighborhood on other measures. For example, stop signs. The stop signs does not, belong to this program.
Okay.
But not for speed humps or, traffic circles and other things that could be in the, typically in the NTMP projects.
The traffic circles would be impractical because of it's
correct.
A very densely built neighborhood.
Right.
And in terms of traffic calming, my concern about speed humps is that if you're coming down Spate, it's this right angle turn to get onto Rogers Street, which just slows traffic anyway. And my interest is also in just preserving Metro from having to bump along in speed humps.
Let me clarify. You will involve Metro in the process.
Metro has seen this.
They already be involved in the process.
Right.
And also, when we do the detailed, let's say the neighbors, we continue the process. The neighbors vote on it and they approve it. We got over 60% of approval rate on this. Then we'll be working on the final design, the details.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll make sure we're working with Metro, make sure we're not causing problems for Metro operation. It might have some minimal impact, but we'll try to keep it as minimum as possible.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor to not approve Spate Street. So is there further discussion on that? Okay, all those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
So I heard from two people. All those opposed to the motion?
No.
No.
Okay, so the balance of the motion would fail. Okay, so there's a motion and a second to approve Spate Street. Further discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Are you opposed?
No.
Okay. All right, motion carried. All right, good discussion. I think this is what we wanted to accomplish here. We have an opportunity to make sure we're allocating resources appropriately.
average weekday traffic.
Okay, next we have road geometry for Bassett Street, item G5. We typically have the presentation from staff first, and then allow the people from that are here who wish to speak from the public, so that you have the opportunity to hear the presentation first, and then we'll have this discussion. Go ahead.
We had three registrants. Did we want to take those first? I'm sorry. It wasn't.
I just said.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I was trying to.
Normally, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page before the public has an opportunity to speak, we like to have the presentation.
Perfect. Okay? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You were focused on what you were doing.
I was, and I still
yes.
am.
That happens to me sometimes when I'm taking notes. So, thank you for coming.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Just bear with me while I get this PowerPoint set up.
Sure.
Okay, so we are talking about the Bassett Street Corridor Transportation Plan and approving the geometry for Bassett Street. The City Council asked us to do a transportation plan for the length of Bassett Street for its full length from Gorham to the end at Wilson Street, and then the stub east of or south of Wilson Street, and then the corridor as it continues around Wilson Street and the connection to or potential connection to North Shore Drive. There has been some chronic water main breaks in the blue section there between Dayton Street and West Washington, and the city is looking to resurface that two-block section, fix the water main issues, resurface the street, and with that, Madison Gas and Electric will be putting in a electrical duct package. So our goal with the study is to look at the corridor as a whole and see kind of what the future of the street is, so that when any changes that we make now will be consistent with the vision for the corridor. We held three public meetings, and the packets were the draft final report of the plan, and then if you scroll towards the end, I attached the comments that came from the public meetings, as well as emails and comment sheets that came in. So if you're curious, just scroll to the back of that. Okay, so traffic volumes on the Bassett Street corridor, once you get past Johnson Gorham, they max out at about 6,800 vehicles per day. South of West Washington, they drop a little bit to about 4,500 cars a day. We did a five-year crash study on the corridor. So one intersection that stuck out a little bit is the West Washington Avenue intersection at 32 crashes. Another metric to look at it is crashes per million vehicles entering. So that kind of takes into consideration how many cars are using the intersection. So we do have more traffic at West Washington Avenue. But still 32 crashes is a large enough number that we want to look at it. This is a common crash occurrence that we found. So the approach to West Washington Avenue on Bassett Street is two through lanes and a right turn lane, and the left turns go, so the left turn is through and left. And what's happening is we have left turns from the middle lane that then crash into southbound cars going through from the left lane. So I don't know if they're thinking that it's a two-way street, or they think maybe that left lane is left turn only and the middle lane is a through and permissive left, something like that. But at any rate, we saw a number of these types of crashes, so we wanted to do something to help this. Talk a little bit about parking along the corridor. There's there's a two-hour residential permit parking, so it's 2 hours parking. It's unmetered. The residents can get the get their residential permit and park for up to 2 days. The occupancy at overnight is basically 100%. It's basically completely used on Bassett Street. We did a study that looked at the occupancy over averaged a couple of days. I think 3 days at 7 p.m. and 5 days at 2 p.m. At 2 p.m. during the day, there's a little more turnover, but this neighborhood is basically pretty parked up.
Is on there.
Yeah, ABC Health is
Mifflin
and Bassett. Okay. I think it's right here, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Bike facilities, the orange lines in this graphic are bike lanes, and then the blue line is kind of a Shero Street, a bike boulevard. And then you can see we have the green lines on the, so this is the Capital City Trail along Lake Monona, and then what I've always referred to as the missing link path over here that goes to the Southwest Trail. So we have, if you look at the dark green lines here, these are kind of the major bike routes in the area. So the Capital City Trail, the trail that goes over to the Southwest Path, West Main Street connecting the Capitol Square to the southwest, and then on campus here we have the University Avenue contraflow lanes, the westbound lane, and then the contraflow lane going eastbound, and then we put in a two-way cycle track on the two blocks of North Bassett here between Gorham Street and Dayton, and then so east of here it's we have bike lanes on Gorham and Johnson Street. But we're really missing kind of a north-south connection through the neighborhood. We do have bike lanes southbound on Bassett Street, but they kind of peter out once you kind of get to Wilson Street around the curve. And then northbound and southbound, actually, on Broome Street, this is a missing connection here. Bike lanes do start up on Broome Street at about Doty. We also have a concurrent study that we are doing with this that's looking at Wilson Street from Broome Street going to the east downtown, and that's taking a more of a detailed look at the intersection of Wilson and Broome Street, but we are working closely with them and those in needs and improvements for this connection affect Bassett Street as well. Metro has a handful of routes on Broome and the Broome Bassett couplet, the 110, 19, and 38. They have basically about service about every 15 minutes throughout the day. So Metro has a fairly strong presence on the Broome-Bassett corridor. We developed a handful of goals and objectives for the project. Let's go through these quickly. Provide safely for all modes of transportation, comfortable bike connection from University Avenue to Lake Monona, satisfy parking needs, preserve a healthy tree canopy and terrace, provide safe and comfortable pedestrian crossings, preserve existing infrastructure investments, provide a corridor plan for Bassett Street, maintain or improve public transit service, and improve operations and safety of the Bassett-West Washington intersection. One thing that we heard at the public meetings was an interest in higher quality bike facilities. A trend that is emerging is the low-stress bike network and designing for all ages and abilities. So the idea is to provide facilities for people who are interested in biking and would like to bike, but they're not willing to bike in next to high traffic volumes and speeds. So, you know, maybe a bike lane isn't going to do it, but they're going to want a little bit more separation. Here's an example of that in Minneapolis. So this would be a protected bike lane. We have parking on the left-hand side of the bike lane, and so traffic is, or bikes are protected from traffic by that row of parking. You can also do a raised barrier, other types of barriers, but this is one example. So you can see you're shielded from traffic, and also the driver's side door is on the other side, so there's some protection from being doored. Here's another example of a two-way cycle track in Boise, separated by a painted buffer and the flexible white delineators there. This is the existing cross section between Gorham and Dayton Street. So you see the two cycle tracks that we put in 2 years ago. It was one on each side going northbound and southbound, and then two vehicle lanes going southbound. Just so everybody's aware, the convention that we've been using is that Bassett and Broome go north-south and West Washington goes east-west. It's kind of a 45-degree angle, so we kind of had to pick one, but that's the way the addresses go, so that's what we did. So we are not proposing any changes on this section. It was just put in two years ago, so we're going to leave that there. This is the existing cross-section for Bassett Street. So we have two travel lanes and then a bike lane and parking lane. And that lane line between the travel lane and the parking lane peters out around Main Street. But the width is a pretty consistent 38 feet from curb face to curb face. So we identified three alternatives, and I'll go through them quickly. I think the cross sections are kind of the best way to show this. So the alternative one keeps pretty much the same layout of lanes that's there now, except it narrows the travel lanes a little bit and widens the bike lane. So we have a 5-foot bike lane separated by a 2-foot painted buffer, and the parking remains next to the curb. Alternative two introduces contraflow northbound lane on Bassett Street. We looked briefly at doing something similar to the raised cycle track that we have on the two north blocks, but one major goal was to preserve the tree canopy and the terraces, and making the driveways work and the utilities, it just didn't look like it was going to work. So we proposed this as an alternative. The way we get the counterflow lane is we remove parking on the north, on North Bassett Street, and then on South Bassett Street, we would keep the parking but remove a drive lane. So that's what you see the note above the blue car on the right. On North Bassett Street, that's a drive lane, and then on South Bassett Street, that would be a parking lane. Alternative three is a protected bike lane. So this would be similar to what you see in those couple photos that I showed. So on North Bassett Street, we would flip the parking in the bike lane. So we would put the bikes on next to the curb, and then put the parking kind of in a floating lane like that, and separate them by a painted buffer with the flexible delineators. One issue that comes up with that is if you think about the way that's going to work, if you are driving. Bassett Street is a one-way street, so if you're driving southbound on Bassett Street and the bikes are behind the parked cars like this, in order to see them, we really need to remove one parking space before the driveway. Otherwise, you have a car that goes right up to the driveway, and then you're turning right. You really will not be able to see that cyclist. So what happens is we end up removing one parking space before each driveway. Normally, on a two-way street, you would have to remove one on each side, but because Bassett Street is one way, we just remove one. So West Washington Avenue, this is kind of a schematic of what this might look like. So what we would like to propose is converting that left-hand lane to a left turn only onto West Washington, and so that... That's a fairly heavy movement anyway, and so if we can dedicate that to left turn, we think we can eliminate most of those sideswipe crashes where we have cars from the middle lane turning left. To do that, we would have to close that second receiving lane on the far side, and so what we'll do is we'll bump out that curb probably with paint or maybe some delineators or something. We don't have that quite exactly figured out, but that's the concept. And then so you end up with one receiving lane in Bassett Street south of West Washington, and that single lane would flow through towards until you get the second and third lane open up on the Broom for the Broom Street intersection. Another thing that you'll see in this drawing is this island for the bus stop. I'll get to that in a second. But what happens is with these the protected bike lane, what happens is the bus will stop in lane in the travel lane, so that the bikes can continue alongside the right-hand side of the bus stop, and that allows the bikes and buses to not do this kind of back and forth jog where they fight for space. So the bikes would just kind of continue straight through on the right alongside the curb. So one thing we have to make sure is that if the bus is here in the lane blocking traffic, that the cars going through can get around the bus and not back into the intersection. So this is what the cross section would look like for alternative three on South Bassett Street. So you can see that there's one travel lane. And what we do is we add parking on the left side, or the east side of the street, and that'll continue around until you get to the end of Wilson Street. The bike lane gets to be a little bit wider because we've lost that travel lane, so we get a little bit more comfortable width here. The width on the bike lane is important for plowing operations. They have said that they would like at least 6 foot, preferred 7 feet. So on South Passage Street, we can give them the 7 feet. Wilson Street is 2 feet wider than Bassett Street, curb to curb, 40 feet. This is what it looks like today. There's parking on the left-hand side and two travel lanes. When you get to the Broom Street intersection, the parking is restricted, and that becomes a left turn only onto Broom. The left travel lane, which is actually kind of right in the middle of the street, becomes through towards continuing onto West Wilson Street, and then the right lane becomes right turn only at Broom going to John Nolan. This is the cross section with alternative three. So you would have the one lane continuing around the curve, parking on the left, and then we add parking on the right, buffered bike lane. Here we don't do the protected bike lane by switching the parking with the bike lane. The reason for that is we have a bus stop mid-block. We also have a relatively short section of parking, and so to have them dive behind the cars just to come right back out and conflict with the right turners going onto Broom, we think it would be better to just keep them in a buffered lane like that. This is a schematic view of the Wilson and Broom Street intersection. So Wilson Street is coming up here. Here's our one-way street coming off of Bassett Street. What we're recommending here is kind of squaring off that channelized right turn, so that becomes more of a conventional squared off intersection. And then what the city's looking at is a shared use path coming up Broom Street from John Nolan Drive that would continue up the two blocks of Broom from John Nolan through Wilson to Doty, and then you could connect with the northbound bike lanes on Broom Street that start up at Doty Street. And then so the bikes coming northbound, or I guess eastbound on Wilson Street, would go through the intersection, and then they could connect. They could go turn right onto the shared use path, go towards John Nolan Drive and the Capital City Trail, or they could continue straight onto Wilson Street, or they could turn left and use the shared use path to go northbound on Broom. So our recommendation with this plan, which you will be acting on, will be to move forward with alternative three. The curbs essentially stay in the same place, so engineering would resurface the street, and we would do a pilot project on North Bassett Street to implement the protected bike lanes. Following a successful pilot on North Bassett, we would do South Bassett, consistent with alternative three. Some other longer-term recommendations would be to replace the 2-foot gutter pans with 1-foot pans where we have bike lanes. That eliminates the having the seam with the gutter pan and the pavement in an area where people are biking, and so your tire doesn't catch there. The curbs in this corridor are in pretty good shape, so they're not they're for the most part going to just stay there. So that wouldn't happen this year, but it would be kind of a longer-term thing to think about. Continental crosswalks and potentially rapid flashing beacons for pedestrians, bus stop islands at the two bus stops on South Bassett Street, possible shared use path through Brittingham Park with a great separated connection to the Capital City Trail there, improve the Wilson and Bassett Street intersection, and improved bike routing northbound on Broome to Dayton and Bassett. I'll talk about that in just a second. So here's the pedestrian improvements, potentially a rapid flashing beacon on North Bassett Street at either Dayton or Mifflin. We're not making a recommendation on which. And South Bassett on either Main or Doty. The other thing that the single lane helps us with is going around the curve. We found that the sight lines are poor there, and that crosswalk is sort of a challenge. We think that with the single lane going around the curve, that will help that particular crosswalk. And then we got a few complaints about the pedestrian facilities at the Wilson Street and Broome Street intersection, so some kind of standard upgrades there. So this is what the bike routing will look like through the neighborhood. The protected bike lanes on Bassett Street and then the standard bike lanes on Broome Street. Maybe that could be something different with a different plan, but we're looking at Bassett Street today. So what the northbound bikes would do is they would go northbound on Broome, and then the best way for them to continue towards University Avenue would turn left on Dayton and then turn right onto Bassett Street. And so I think just improving this signage and kind of this left turn wayfinding, just so that people kind of know where to go and they can find their way onto University Avenue, would help with that. We got some complaints that people don't know how to use the cycle track on North Bassett Street, that there were some pedestrians using it and things like that. So we're not going into the details, but just recommending looking at maybe some improvements to that. This is a picture of a bus stop island. So you can see the bus stops in the travel lane and then the bikes go around the back. So that eliminates the conflict between the bus and the bike. The bus stops in the lane. You get this island that people can board and the bus and get off the bus. And then what we do have to pay some attention to is the crossing of the bike lane for the pedestrians so that bicyclists know that they have to yield to pedestrians crossing at crosswalks there. This is a summary of the parking. I'd like to talk a little bit about the parking in the corridor. We have on North Bassett Street, if you kind of ignore the black box, look at the red and blue boxes. On the first block, we have seven parking spaces. Just look at the two blocks together between Dayton and West Wash. We have 14 total parking spaces. We would be removing seven. So we would have seven left. On South Bassett Street, we similarly remove a handful of spots for the driveways, the visibility around the driveways, but we also add some parking on the left side. Towards the Wilson Street curve, what we're actually showing here is moving the existing near side bus stop at Doty Street to far side. So what you see is a few stalls getting added before the intersection and then a bunch of stalls getting removed after the intersection. But the main thing here is we're adding a handful of stalls on the left-hand side, which does overcome the parking loss on the other side. Overall, we net four additional stalls. Now, does that somewhat ameliorate the loss of parking at North Bassett Street? Perhaps. It's a few blocks away. It's sort of part of the same neighborhood. Depending on where you're going, that may help you. It may not. Swinging around to Wilson Street.
It's a net of three spaces between the two?
No, we are, yes. Yes, a net removed between North and South Bassett Street. We remove seven north, and we add four south. So between the two, we're net losing three.
Thank you.
On the one block of Wilson Street, we are adding, I believe, six parking spots on the right-hand side. So that is the conclusion of my presentation. I just want to, before I let you go here, I just want to quickly run through the geometrics. And this is, again, stapled to the plan.
Yeah, we got a copy of those things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to show them quick, and if you have any questions, feel free to ask.
Yeah, we just to remind everybody, we're asked to approve the roadway geometry for Bassett Street from Dayton to West Washington. That's all we're specifically approving
blocks.
Today.
I've been interacting with John Strange,
mm-hmm.
because this is a new thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And ordinarily, the Transportation Policy Board would approve the corridor plan, and then this would be the body that mm-hmm. implements the corridor plan.
Right.
And so because of the quick timing, it seems mm-hmm. like the road went to here instead of TPPB. Mm-hmm. TPPB might also take this and adopt the plan, which mm-hmm. would go from University to Broome. Mm-hmm. Right now, you are just at task with Dayton to West Washington. Mm-hmm. And this is supposed to be an implementing body, and then the board is supposed to be a corridor planning body.
Correct. Thank you for that clarification. Okay, so three registrants, two wish to speak, one does not and is available to answer questions, so I'd like to let them mm-hmm. speak, and then we'll have questions from the group.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Process
question.
Yes. Your opening remarks before you introduced Mike, did you say that normally we would have a two-meeting situation?
No. I said I wanted just a presentation so we were all on the same page before the people from the public spoke.
Oh, okay. There wasn't.
There was a question about who was supposed to go first.
Oh, okay. Now,
yeah.
But we weren't, you know, it isn't our normal practice to have the presentation and then wait till the next meeting to go.
Oh, no.
I misunderstood.
Yep, no. Mm-hmm. It was just a question of how to handle the public.
Yep.
Okay. All right, so first, Robert Peterson, 32 North Bassett, wishes to speak, is opposed.
Yeah. Oh.
Patrick, I'll give you this to you then. We have seats at a premium at the table, apparently, so.
It's good on the table.
So
evening.
You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Bobby Peterson here with...
You're watching the 3 minutes?
A walker, a biker, a driver in this area. I work at ABC for. Doesn't count against my 3 minutes.
Pardon me, thank you.
I work in the area. I've been in the area for about the last 10 years. I'm opposed to alternative 3, particularly because of the loss of 7 parking spots within the block of ABC for Health. We're a nonprofit public interest law firm. We serve clients that are low income with physical disabilities. Parking is a premium. I think we heard that in that area. And losing those 7 spots within a block of our office is really detrimental to our business, to our clients, to our operations. We don't think we're bikers too. We're not opposed to improving the bike lanes and the sight lines and things like that, but we also really want to be concerned about limiting parking in that area. We participated in another planning process, which is Mifflandia, which is envisioning a major restructuring of that area. The density is going to change. I think that I asked the question of this group whether they had taken that into consideration in the planning year, and it doesn't sound like it had been. The neighborhood's changing. The population density is changing. The housing is changing. This plan doesn't, I think, goes too far at this point. We believe that working on alternative 1, which accommodates bikes, which doesn't eliminate parking, and which also preserves the canopy, was the plan that we felt was really carrying the day in our first meeting and our second meeting. The last meeting, which was on the coldest day of the year where the fewest people showed up, mm-hmm. is when alternative 3 was proposed. We went to it, but we felt that it's not in the best interest. I think in the future planning, too, as we go farther south on Bassett Street, that's a real choke point, that intersection. It gets very crowded. Going to one lane and moving parking in there, I think, could be very problematic. As a driver that drives that stretch in the evenings, it gets backlogged quite a bit. And I think it's going to become a major choke point unless they have restrictive parking during, the rush hour period or during games or things like that. So from our perspective, we were really in favor of option one. We felt that it was the best balanced, and it didn't harm our clients or our office at ABC Front. I'll take any questions if you have any.
Do you have any questions for the speaker?
I do have a question.
So with the parking that's there now, I assume that's all just general parking that your clients essentially compete with neighborhood residents for?
Right. It's two-hour parking, but there's enough turnover there, and so we can manage for clients. Sometimes it's a challenge for them, but, typically we're able to work out an arrangement so that we can reserve a spot for them.
And if I recall, yours is the only business in this stretch, correct?
Right. We're the only business in that section. We're right at the corner. We're the old Mifflin Street Co-op building. So we bought that back in 2007 and converted it to our public interest law firm.
And one final question. How long are your customers typically? What's your customer's typical
time? I'd say about an hour or so for a meeting with a client to review their information, to help them. And, we're working on healthcare coverage issues, Medicaid, disability issues, Badger Care, private health insurance issues, all related to helping people, lower income folks mostly connect to healthcare coverage.
Thanks. Any other questions for the speaker? Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Next, Bryn McBride, 32 North Bassett. Opposed, wishes to speak.
Hi, thank you very much. When Mike said who wanted to go first, I said we can put age before beauty, so I'm going second. So some of my points are a little repetitive, but I wanted to just express again that we do think there's a Goldilocks solution where we can accommodate biking and driving and parking, and that's really important for us. So my concerns were in three categories. As Bobby said, we are a public interest law firm. We serve about 2,500 family members in any given year. We do have families that come right to the office and they'll bring their kids with them. So accessible, approximate parking has been really important for us since 2007 when we moved into the old grocery store. And we still get a couple grocery shoppers, by the way. So we just tell them what we do now. So accessible parking for them is important, especially in the proximity. So we know gaining a couple spots down 2-3 blocks beyond West Washington was on the table for alternative three, which we needed a little bit closer for us. The second concern is, again, for our staff. We do have staff that bike to work, and we have bike parking for them behind our building, but we also do have staff that drive to work. And a lot of our staff are deployed to local hospitals throughout the day, too, to visit patients when they're in their hospital room. So we'll have staff that will have to grab a car, run over to a hospital, and come back. So part of our business model does require folks to drive, and it is a requirement for some of our advocates to have access to a car. So we want to make sure we can preserve parking for them as well. And my last concern centered on that congestion point, and I know this is probably for a future conversation when you do talk about beyond West Washington onto that South Bassett corridor, but as Bobby indicated as well, that congestion will be a concern for us. We know throughout the day the traffic might kind of average out, but at that evening rush hour, that really is a busy time for traffic to back up as on the street the way it is right now on Bassett. So the evening rush hour is tough. Events are tough. We're between the Overture Center and the Kohl Center. So on game days and when there's a concert going on at the same time, that's a really busy place to be. So squeezing that down to one lane is going to be a little bit tricky for us. But like I said, and Bobby agreed with this as well in his comments, that alternative one that did accommodate biking, so we could have a better flow coming up Broome and down Bassett for some of the bikers and not losing those seven spots. Seven doesn't sound like much. When it's half of our available parking, it's a lot. So our staff was really concerned about that, and they thought about our clients first in that concern. And that's all I've got for today.
Any questions for the speaker? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
There's a third registrant. I'm having trouble reading your writing. Ryan, is it?
That's correct.
opposed, does not wish to speak, available to answer questions. Just sort of summarizing the recommendation to eliminate the parking on Bassett and Offset, on North Bassett and Offset with additional parking on South Bassett will ultimately cause traffic congestion to individuals using the Wilson Broom to enter the Beltline. Again, relates to...
I felt like you might struggle to read my handwriting, which I apologize for that. So I put I didn't want to speak, but I can speak just briefly. Brent and Bobby did a good job articulating some of the concerns that I have that are summarized here. Yeah, thanks. So full disclosure, I am an employee of ABC for Health. I rely a lot on the seven spaces that are proposed to be eliminated with alternative three. I just want to talk more as a commuter and a person who works in the area, but I think by eliminating these spaces, you're making it more difficult to, for me, to economically get to work every day. The spots would be somewhat shifted further down. We would ultimately lose three, but I can't tell this group enough how much I've had to invest in simply relying on the Overture parking garage to park my car for the day, which is usually about $8. Over the course of the year, that gets to be pretty expensive. So I read the proposal. I'm not a city planner, but I just think it doesn't pass my personal sniff test, and I have a lot of concerns about what alternative three would do. I agree with Bryn and Bobby and the I think Bryn said Goldilocks approach, which kind of addresses everything. It accommodates the bikers. It accommodates the commuters. It accommodates them as business owners and accommodates me and my interests. So you have any questions?
I do. You move your car every 2 hours? You probably don't want to answer that, okay, in a public meeting. So. I mean, that's the implication, but
right.
Is that a serious question?
Okay.
Are there other questions? Good observation, though. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for staying, Mike. So, questions for Mike? Ken?
Mike, in as far as alternative one and alternative three, is there research on the difference between actual safety versus perceived safety for bikers?
It's a good question. There is a lot of literature out there. These are widely accepted strategies.
Both of them?
Well, yeah. I mean, we've been putting in bike lanes for a long time. The buffered bike lanes are a little bit newer, but there's several examples around Madison. The protected bike lanes would be new. I don't think we have any in this area. The devil is kind of in the details on that. As we're talking about here, the visibility is key, because if you have a lot of driveways and intersections, those are in any mode, mm-hmm. that's kind of the danger point. So if you don't put some attention into that and get those right, then you could be setting yourself up for safety problems. And so that's why we want to do that right.
So let me just, my feedback is the thing of perceived safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person in alternative three, the biker, thinks, this is great. I don't have to worry about cars. And you, zoom right through that intersection. And, of course, so there's always that thing of getting overconfident when you're thinking, this is just for me, mm-hmm. as opposed to sort of being exposed to a little bit of the risk if you're sitting out there in traffic, but in fact you're a lot more visible to the thing that's really going to hurt you is the car turning in front of you, mm-hmm. having done that.
Yeah.
Not driving the car, being in the opposite situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tom, if you want to. Could you come up to a mic?
Share with
Yang? Sure. We're sharing resources today. Yeah.
So I've been doing quite a few phone calls. I've looked at 6 to 7 different design manuals regarding protected and separated bicycle ways. I've talked with Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, Minneapolis, and then the NAFTA in Washington, D.C. And so right now, protected bike lanes, they originated right around 2011. An organization called People for Bikes has been advocating for them. They're kind of a parallel organization with the League of American Cyclists. Right now, they're in probably, I'm pulling this, is it 32 states? I can't remember. You know, I think I gave it at the presentation last month. Chicago plans to implement 100 miles of them. Minneapolis, 140 miles of them. Detroit is adding them. Indianapolis is adding them. And so it's becoming an emerging trend. As far as ridership, it is boosting ridership, and various locations are getting different types. I think as much as 170%, and then maybe just others. There's a graph that I showed at the board meeting as perhaps 10%. The reason why we are, you know, the authors of the report, which I was part of, we proposed a pilot here is because it's a relatively constrained two-block area where we have a biking need, and that we could see, well, how does a protected bikeway perform? This has driveways, so I guess we don't know how they will interact with driveways, and that's why it's a one-year pilot. It's not. We also, because it's at grade, if this was a raised cycle track, for instance, it's kind of irreversible. You know, the cycle tracks that are north of Dayton are irreversible. But here, if we find that it doesn't perform well, we just take our plastic delineators and pull them out. So it's seemed like a reasonable place to try it, to see how. There's a lot of things that we don't know. For instance, snow removal. We don't know what snow removal would be like. And salt, you know, Bassett Street is a salt route. How does it work in a protected bike lane if the salt isn't distributed from the main lane? So there's just a lot of things we just don't know. We thought this is a reasonable place to try it. There is a parking loss, and the parking loss will be felt. If you look at the whole area, if you look at the whole area as kind of one block in every direction, it ends up being about maybe 7% of the parking that will be lost for the year. So that is something, you know. But it's there's kind of a picture you can kind of see. You know, I prefer to park as close to my destination as possible, but, you know, I live kind of in the central city. I hate it when I have to park my car down the block, you know, but I do. You know, it's part of that's it. So that's why we felt like it was a reasonable proposal and a recommendation.
So other questions for Mike and Tom? Jessica?
Can you remind me also if there are any bus, there would be no track bus islands or kind of permanent, I guess my question it really is, this is, like you said, kind of a matter of paint and position of pylons, right? So from a pilot perspective, it's 1 and 3 are very similar, but for where the paint and the pylons go. Kind of a follow-on question, and I don't know if it's just not reflected here, but in alternative 1, why are the flexible barriers not used when the bike lane is closest to traffic?
Because the cars have to get to their parking spots. And so the pylons are kind of meant to be a barrier between the cars and the cyclists. And so the pylons, I guess the spacing can vary from 10 to 40 feet. I think Minneapolis uses about 20 feet as their standard. Is that?
I think 30.
Was it 30? Okay, great. So.
And if I could do one
I misremembered.
Sure. Go ahead,
last question, and then I'll be done. On the spaces that are there now, what are the opportunities to work with parking to change the? So currently it's 2-hour parking. Could you change it to either 1-hour or metered parking in order to accommodate and preserve the fewer remaining spaces for the retail
use that's there.
Yeah, I think two-hour parking is pretty common for retail. And even, I think they mentioned their typical client visit might be an hour. So an hour parking might not be enough.
Mm-hmm. Or if it were metered, it maybe encourages people to move their car after that two-hour time frame.
I think that will help because so right now it's two-hour parking. But the residents also allowed to purchase RP3 for one permit, mm-hmm. which means they can park there 48 hours, mm-hmm. which reduces availability of the parking.
Yeah.
If we convert to a parking meter parking, then the residents will not be able to park there 48 hours, so it's more available.
So I'm sorry, was that discussed as an option? Or no?
No, we didn't look at any changes to the parking structure.
Other questions? Discussion points? Say again?
Sorry.
Okay. So we're asked to approve the roadway geometry for Bassett Street from Dayton to West Washington, and what is recommended is alternative 3. So how are you feeling?
Move approval.
Okay, there's a motion on the table to approve alternative 3.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. Discussion.
So this commission is asked to sort of deal with implementation of a transportation system, of system-wide transportation things like bus parking, and now new to this, newish, oldish, you know, to the TPC members anyways, is this roadway geometry. But it's still part of a system that includes car storage and moving people on streets in multiple ways. So we've already built a couple blocks of low-stress bike facilities just to the north of this that connects to a protected bike lane on University Avenue. And the thinking behind this pilot is to see if we can extend, really build that out systematically to connect to other low-stress bike facilities in a really important part of the city where we currently have no connection of that type. Would you say that's right, Mike? I mean, that's how, you know, your initial maps showed that. There are going to be costs for that, and one of those costs is on-street car storage and parking. And it's a tough, tough issue for people who are immediately affected by that. And it's something that, as a city, we are not actually, we haven't done any planning around that. And it's something that Alder Zellers and I are working on. Well, I guess she's meeting with you tomorrow, Tom, on really getting another working group together to study the issue of parking as it relates to land use planning and development and transportation system planning and development, because it's just not an integrated part of any of that planning currently, but every time we try to do something, it's a big issue. Yeah. And we don't have any guidelines or comprehensive plans for how we're going to deal with that. And that's something, if this Mifflandia plan is happening, I mean, and other current neighborhood plans are happening, that's something that really needs to be articulated as part of what we're dealing with, because it all connects. And there's a reason why, you know, it costs $8 a day, which is, by the way, we heard the cheapest structured parking in the city to park at Overture. There's a reason why our rates are what they are for parking, and that's because we are trying to build a system where fewer people drive. We're trying to de-incentivize driving and incentivize bus, walking, ped, mm-hmm. bike for a multiple reasons. So while it's really hard to hear about people's individual struggle with parking, I feel like we have a responsibility to try new things to actually build out a system instead of doing, you know, one thing on this two blocks, another thing on that two blocks, and something different on that four blocks. And since we've already started this sort of low-stress bike facility connected to University Avenue, which is protected on those first two blocks of North Bassett, I feel like a one-year pilot period of on these two blocks is not, you know, it just makes sense. It just, to me, it's just common sense that we do that.
Other comments? Ken?
I heard the word pilot, mm-hmm. and when I worked in government, pilot, they always said, okay, what's your criteria for evaluating the pilot before you approve it as a pilot? Do we have criteria other than...
You mean what's going to happen at the end of the period?
At the end of a year, how do we, you know, other than, I mean, hopefully not crash it, you know, what is it that in data terms we look for on that?
Tom?
These are not written down. I could write them down, though, perhaps. I think one concern for me is this is a residential street with driveways, okay? And if you think about the driveway usage, it's probably infrequent, right? Maybe, I don't know, 10, you know, maybe entrance and exit from that driveway 10 times a day, right? And if you look at this bike facility, if it had 500 cyclists a day, that would be 50 maybe during the peak hour. The chances that, two of those driveway entrances would occur at the exact same time as when a cyclist is there, I think will probably be infrequent. But that may not be the case. You see what I'm mm-hmm. saying? But when I look at the volumes, kind of put them through a random generator, I think it will be rare where there is a conflict, and where there is a conflict, we're trying to provide the site distance. But I would like to know, I would like that to be verified. And then a second thing is that while we have a lot of external stakeholders involved in this, we also have internal stakeholders. And this is right now, I think our streets, winter maintenance, they already feel like they cannot keep up. And they already feel like they are challenged meeting these expectations. And so, they need to understand, well, what do these look like? If these are implemented in other places, they need to do that. We've been trying to get them to interact on a conference call and a visit to some of their peers over in Minneapolis. But these snow emergencies just keep getting in the way. That hasn't happened yet. So those are probably the two primary things that we're most, I am primarily concerned about.
So one of the questions came up before was safety. The argument from the biking community pushing for this is not really about safety, but it's more about ridership, about creating a network that's low stress enough so that be more towards all ages abilities, so we get more riders in the system. So I think that may be another criteria for the to the idea for the pilot project.
It will be. I think when they've done ridership changes or measured ridership, they've been measured over a full corridor, like Chicago, Michigan. They've measured ridership before and after, and it's a whole corridor. And one or two people advocated at the public meeting, could we do the whole corridor down to Broome Street to see if it really does make a difference? You know what I mean? I think there's engineering, I think, was reluctant to do that right now. And
so you want a shorter track.
Yeah. So I think West Washington provides somewhat of a logical termini, but I think that the best would probably be to Broome. But
Ken?
Would Alder Kemble accept a friendly amendment that the team, the engineering team, give us some criteria for evaluating the pilot within the next couple of months as part of the motion to approve?
Sure. Yes, that would...
I think that's the way to be accountable if we're going to call it a pilot. That, yeah. Okay.
I'll agree with that.
Okay. Other comments? Steve?
Sorry,
go
ahead. I think Alder Kemble did a great job of articulating many of the policy issues involved in this from a bigger transportation perspective. But the bigger issue beyond that to me is also the equity lens. And I think that as someone who's coached a couple of their clients in my life, I completely understand where they're coming from in terms of how this is going to disparately impact the types of clients that they bring to their business. And I'm not going to vote against it, but I just want us to be mindful that in this particular instance, this is not holding that smell test for me. So I'm hoping that staff, as they work through this and look at the metered parking and the other things, can hopefully arrange for some creative alternatives to offset that disparate impact that that business is going to feel, because they really are doing pretty remarkable work for a very disadvantaged and disenfranchised group in the community, and I don't want that group to be suffering any more than they already are.
So, Steve, are you suggesting that the engineering department look at when they come back with the criteria for the pilot, that perhaps they consider some of these parking alternatives?
I think the pilot's different from that. I think that what I'm asking for is, as no matter what alternative that does, if it has impact on the parking for that area, that they try to do their best to alleviate that.
Sure. Maybe that's something you talk about in would you have about legal as well? Jessica.
Yeah, I guess my sort of maybe related question is, what is the process or procedure for people who might be impacted by a parking loss to talk to, for example, to explore meter options? Or is that something that we need to consider adding to this amendment? Or is there a separate process that they can go through after the fact to request consideration for installation of meters?
I would recommend waiting to see. You know, installing meters here, we would have to talk with our parking utility, and I could actually report back at the next meeting what would be the options. This may be a big deal, and it may not. It's hard. Change is always hard, you know, and oftentimes when we look at change, we think of things that are that will be hard about it, but we don't necessarily see the benefits. For instance, I was a project manager for Monona Drive, and that was the worst project in the world before it was built. And then after it was built, it was the best project in the world, you know. And so it's just when you look through a lens, oftentimes the negatives often it's good to consider the negatives, but they may not materialize the way we think, perhaps.
So I want to add that you know, there is actually a process for that, because the location is the RP3 zone again. The ordinance actually requires a public hearing in front of this commission. It used to be Transit Parking Commission, but now it should be this commission. To force to change that, because we're talking about the potentially remove those RP3 area, put in meter parking. So there should be a public hearing process involved.
Gary?
Yeah, we talked about this maybe at TPC a year and a half ago. We talked about the RP3 program.
Mm-hmm. We did.
And we floated the idea of introducing meters, but obviously because there are RP3 users, that they would be exempt from plugging a meter. And we never really got anywhere with that because it seemed pretty complicated.
Right.
And so, you know, to your question, I mean, to introduce meters in an RP3, I mean, there's other steps that we'd have to really look at, or engineering would have to look at, and it's more complicated than what seems to be a good idea, you know.
Comment is less even specific to this. It was more of a general question of what is that process, because I would say from a discussion standpoint that I agree with Alder Kemble's thoughts that we're looking at a longer term usage, and that, you know, personally, that streets are primarily a throughfare, are primarily to provide access to parts of our city, and not their primary function is in car storage. But that said, we understand that the that the uses along the street have different needs for car storage depending on the nature of their business. And, you know, a retail center is going to need to be able to operate their business for people to stop for short periods of time. That's not the same as necessarily a car storage function. So to be able to separate the kinds of parking, I think, is important.
So
as we think about these long term.
So perhaps we could add a future agenda item on the process to change parking.
Yeah, or just, you know, I guess I would echo what Alder Kemble already said of just it needs parking.
I'll talk to you.
Is a bigger
down there. Yeah.
Piece of this whole thing that we
it
need to.
Be, well, it may be. I'll talk to you about it. Because there may be a process.
Yeah.
All right. Steve.
For everyone's information, there are a few alders who are going to bring up the idea, not the idea, the proposal that we form an ad hoc committee of some sort to talk about parking in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've had a whole bunch of issues that have come forward recently related to this
that
are not
somewhere.
Solvable. yes. but it's really like a recent issue that came to a head was that the Peloton at Fish Hatchery and Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that neighborhood is stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And we are running out of alternatives to deal with more creative solutions. So looking at that and also talking about other things that have come up about disincentivizing parking with buildings and other things. So
sure.
I think you're going to hear about that
about
coming forward to investigate parking as a more systemic thing in the city and coming up with alternatives or I don't know what do you call it,
a
coherent plan or policy
plan.
For it. That would, of course, involve everyone that's involved here and in the Transportation Policy Board, but really something driven by the council to sort of get this on the radar of the city.
Good. Okay, my understanding is that we have a motion to approve alternative 3. For the road geometry for Bassett Street from Dayton to West Wash, with the amendment that engineering would give us some criteria in terms of how they're going to judge the success of the pilot within the next few months. I didn't hear a specific time frame. Within 3 months, is that reasonable?
2 months, let's just say 2 months.
Is 2 months, is that acceptable time? 3 months, what do you think?
It can be.
This is actually the way this.
Give me a month. 2 months, 3 months?
This will go before Board of Public Works in March, middle of March.
Okay.
If it's approved there, how about I come back with the criteria for the policy?
Okay, so the criteria would come back to us after it's approved at the Board of Public Works.
Sounds like 2 months to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Further discussion? I'm just trying to keep up with everything here. Further discussion? Okay, let's call a vote. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Next, don't think we have any additional engineering department referrals. Good. Thank you. I'm good because my goal was 2.5 hours is what I was shooting for, so we're close. So, Rebecca, do you want to give us a brief update on the policy board?
I could. So the last couple of months, we've been getting similar buckets of information from Tom's department, including the most notable thing last month at TPPB was a very involved presentation on some of what you saw in this last presentation around bike facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave us a long presentation on, you know, starting with the, what would you say, a wide range of bike facilities, how cities in other parts of the country are building them out, as well as a sort of table of criteria of what you build where, with the caveat being you just do the best you can, basically. So hopefully that board will be studying that material more and either set policy or adopt some standards as policy for this body to be able to use to make decisions like this.
That'd be great.
Have I said that pretty fairly? Yeah. So that's what we spent the bulk of our time doing at the meeting. We also went over the Metro Facility Report that I think this body, I get confused, this body, did this body see it?
We saw a brief. Report on this, but it was a while ago.
And the BRT. So you've been being briefed on the BRT and Metro Facilities. We'll be, the TPPB and some alders will be coming out with a resolution to support the city moving on purchasing some land at Oscar Mayer as a satellite facility based on these reports. And I think those were the two, the winter bike maintenance facility. So we've also been working on that, on setting he and engineering and parks and what other department? Is it those three that do the different snow removal on bike facilities? They've really been working hard to figure some things out and learn lessons about, like, the door zone, for example, themselves when they got caught up in it. So, that's what we talked about.
Great. Well, we're still trying to figure out how we work together. My thought process is for the Transportation Commission to do our job, we need to understand what the policies are. So getting briefings from time to time on anything that goes through the policy board that sets a new policy, I think, is great. So, again, this is all relatively new, so we'll continue to work together to understand what goes where and what we need to do to what we need to know to do our job.
Right.
So we appreciate that. Great, thanks. Just a reminder that we have a tour coming up on Wednesday, February 27th, before our next meeting. Traffic engineering parking tour, 2:30 to 4. Patrick had sent out an email, so all the particulars with the address are in there. Maybe you could resend that out to people to remind them so that they have it on their calendars, if you wouldn't mind, because the address and everything is, since it was a manual, it was an invitation that landed on your calendar, if you wouldn't mind just shooting it out as a reminder to people, that would be great. And I don't want to speak for you, Yang, but I know from Chuck's point of view, when people couldn't go on the tour that we organized for Metro, if you want to arrange an opportunity to come at a different time, that's certainly something you guys could work out. Would that be right?
Yeah, we can work it out.
Okay.
But we do help get
people together.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it might be difficult for us to do, you know, one by one all the time.
Yeah. So we could organize a second follow-up if we have a number of people who aren't able to come. Okay, great. I didn't have any other announcements. Anybody have anything else for future agendas?
Just announcements. I've got that our taxi appeal is set for February 25th at 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I don't know where. Do you recall? Did we get anything?
Keith hasn't told me anything.
Okay, so I need to know. It's on the
25th, on Monday the 25th.
At 5 o'clock.
Could
I mean, that took a long time.
Could you just ask Keith to shoot them an email so we know for sure where they're supposed to go?
Yeah.
Is that a has to be a posted meeting?
Yes.
I assume so, since it's a subcommittee.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so he'll work with.
Thank you.
Yeah, he'll work with.
I've got something.
Gary?
I like the motion that dealt with Spade Street. I want to be recorded as no. I was kind of wishy-washy on
it. Okay. I wasn't certain whether you were voting yes or no.
And I want to clear
Carl
that.
Carl voted no, so Gary is saying that he voted no on Spade Street. Yeah. He wants to clarify.
My intent was
that
to vote no.
His
but the
motion
still.
Vote, I heard it was.
So it still passed with two no's. We would have still
yeah,
passed.
Yeah, so it doesn't change the outcome.
So that would have been on the second motion on item G4.
Specifically on Spade Street.
On Spade Street. Okay. Anything else on future agenda items? Okay.
We'll
adjourn in a second.
Second.
All right. Motion in a second. All those in favor?
7:30.
Hold on. Yay!